Andrew Curtis's most recent exhibition, Slab, is the result of hours spent on construction sites at night photographing works in progress, architectural shapes like slabs, scaffolding unformed earth, lit by painting with light, as you'll hear when we go on location. But Andrew Curtis isn't interested in the site or what it's going to be, rather revealing or disguising its forms.
An artist I really do love is an American sculptor called Richard Serra, and he's from the minimalist movement. He was still making superb sculptures, but he started in the early 70s, and he makes very, very, very big sculptures out of steel. They are very, very minimal, but have a great power. And so I was trying to work out how I could come up with that in photography. That was my starting point, and slabs of concrete were quite similar to Richard Serra's, you know, slabs of steel. So it was a process of going out to sites and trying to work out how to achieve the similar sort of power without copying Richard Serra. And slowly it evolved. And the early shots I was quite happy with at the time. I look back now and they're terrible. But slowly I evolved a look which actually, as it moved on, had less to do with Richard Serra and more to do with me, which is how you want it to go anyway. I realise now, looking back, they could never be, you know, minimalist statements like Richard Serra, because the actual subject matter is there's too much going on. There's dirt, there's struts. But that I started to turn to my advantage.
So once you've once you have those images, what happens then, the process of making the prints? It's not something you do yourself. You have them done in a lab?
Well, I've got a darkroom, but it's more of a storeroom at the moment, and I'm busy as a commercial photographer during the day, and the night after the shoot, I generally, or even on the night, I take my dark slides to the lab and leave them in the drop-off box so I can pick them up at lunchtime the next day processed. They're sheets of film. They're 5 by 4 inches. It's not a roll of film. And I get back the black and white negs. And being big and being experienced at reading negatives, I can look at them straight away and see if they've got potential, if they've been well exposed, they've got enough sort of guts in the density. And the next process is to come back to the studio and quickly throw them on my scanner and scan them and make them into positive prints on the computer. And that's when I get to see the fruits of my labour from the night before. Then if it gets selected for the show, then it goes to the next process of the actual printing. And that's quite an involved process because they're very large prints. They're 1.2 by 1.5 metres big. The negative goes in the enlarger. It's a big old enlarger on a track, like a train track on the ground, and it's projecting the image onto a wall, what you'd call mural size, and that wall is magnetic, and the photographic paper comes out in rolls and it gets put on the wall and held on with magnets, and then the paper is exposed. But although it's all very big, again, it's just sort of old-fashioned darkroom technology. There's nothing special there. We manipulate the prints. I help the printer because we need four hands often to dodge and burn. And we do test strips, and it can take because of the size, and they're printed on traditional fibre-based papers, which need to be washed for 4 hours and toned. It's a very slow process. We really only get one print done in a day. Mm. So we start at 8 in the morning and hope that by lunchtime we've done 3 or 4 test strips and maybe two actual murals and hang it up. And if it looks good, then I go and the printer continues the job of washing them and toning them and hanging them up to dry at 5 o'clock at night. And then the next day I come back in to see how it looks dry and finished.
In the studio of photographer Andrew Curtis, who is today's maker. And Andrew, I wonder if you might just be good enough to explain what you're doing here in the very narrow street outside your warehouse studio.
Just doing the boring job of loading up all the equipment, heavy equipment. Well, I've got a trolley because tonight's location is walking distance, which is lucky. And I've got my camera, the accessories to the camera, the lighting, the tripod, which is a very big, heavy tripod, all put neatly onto a trolley.
And a battery. You need a battery for lights?
I've got a car battery to run my spotlight. And I've got another spotlight which has its own little battery in it. So I'm sort of ready to go.
This is a very narrow street, Andrew, which is probably a good thing because we're pushing this trolley of yours with all the gear straight up the middle of it.
Well, it's nice and hidden away. It's a light industrial street, so it's got a mixture of old Richmond houses and factories. You know, just what I like.
Cross the road to the left. We won't wait for this turn.
We're just on a site in Richmond. It's dirty, it's messy, it's wet, it's cold. I get nervous. I'm usually by myself, and I've always got nervous doing my work because of the areas I'm in, the secluded areas. But I think all that nervousness always shows through anyway in the final shot, so although I don't enjoy it, this process at all, I know it's good for the final images. But there's no rewards at the moment. I mean, the rewards come later when I see the final shots, but tonight it's just heavy work and dirty and cold. And
because we're actually below ground level, aren't we?
Yeah, we're in a car park, so we're, I think, the start of what must be a car park because it's underground. Mm. And a lot of the underground shots are great because you get the archaeological sort of dig-outs of the walls. That really helps with the look I'm trying to achieve.
Do you come into these sites with permission, Andrew?
I'm often asked that. To start with, no. When I was just experimenting, you know, trying to achieve the look that I had in my head, I didn't go to the trouble because I didn't know if there was a show to be had or not. So I wouldn't say I was breaking into sites, but I was finding little holes in cyclone fencing and squeezing through or moving barricades slightly and doing the wrong thing, I suppose. But as soon as I realised there was something good to be had out of this subject matter, I started getting permission from people. And it just means going during the day and finding the foreman and showing him my catalogue or previous work that I've done to show I'm serious and saying, any chance of leaving the gate unlocked, you know, on a particular night, or even letting me have a key, and I'll be very careful and I'll give you a letter of indemnity in case anything happens to me, you won't be responsible, and we work out a night and go from there.
And do you have people refuse, or are they keen for you to do it, particularly once they've seen your work? I'm just wondering how they might view you and your work when they decide whether or not they're giving permission.
They actually really show interest in the work. I've never had anyone sort of go, oh, that's fantastic. And I've also not had, for this show, anyone refuse. So there's probably only 5 to 10 people with sites that I've had to sort of approach people for, and no one refused, which was interesting. So now it's just a matter of in the dark trying to set up the camera rough in the right spot, and then I'll get a spotlight out and start looking through the camera, which is very hard to look through because it's an old-fashioned view camera where you put a hood over your head and you have to look hard onto a piece of ground glass to try and see the image. When you add to that the fact that it's dark and I've only got a small spotlight, it gets even harder to see. So that's the slow process now, is just looking through the camera and slowly sort of composing the shot, which again on the view camera appears to me on the ground glass being upside down and back to front. And yeah, so it's a difficult part at this point, but we'll get there.
The exposures, I imagine, must be quite long. How do you figure that out? How do you determine that?
That's all just from experience, but the exposure will vary completely depending on how big the area I'm photographing is. If I'm close in on a smaller area, then it's not going to take me long to light. But if I pull right back and have a whole sort of almost landscape, the exposure could be 10 minutes or more to work around all the complex little lighting bits that I want to do. But again, as I said, if it's a small area, it might only take 30 seconds to light it. This particular area is medium size, so it might take about a minute or two to do it. But as far as what aperture I set the camera at and how long I shoot light, that's just totally hit and miss. But I hope after 15 years I've got it fairly well down. It might take one or two Polaroids to get a handle on where I'm at, but there's no light meter involved, so it's all guesswork. At f16, with this sort of sized, medium-sized area, I probably would do 20-second bursts of light from two or three different areas and go from there, see how the Polaroid looks. It's pitch black, so I'm going to open the shutter and leave it open. It could stay open all night. As long as it's black in here, nothing's going to be recording on the film. So I'll open the shutter, then I'll go into my first lighting position, and once I turn my light on, I'll start quickly spraying my light around like it's oil on a canvas, directing it at all the right spots. As it paints the concrete with light, that will be recording on the film.
You're using it like you might if you had a mining lamp, and you were underground to just highlight the bits that you want, the bits that are important to you. So it's quite directional. Everything else is dark. There's a half-lit surface or a half-lit angle, something like that.
Yes, but unlike the mining light, which if you turn your head from one side to the other, it doesn't leave its impression. Obviously here it's leaving its impression as it pans. And I can, with faster wrist movements, make the light appear smoother on a big flat surface, or with a slower, shaky wrist, give the slab of concrete a more of a milky, sort of a milky quality.
Okay, let's have a look.
So I'm opening the shutter now. It's open, and now I'm going to bury myself into this position and start lighting. So that was my 15 seconds of what I would call sort of fill light. It's just filling in the shadow areas a bit so they're not pitch black. I'll just shutting the lens and putting the dark slide back in on the Polaroid, and now I'll pull it and see how it looks. Well, that's quite a good first Polaroid, which is, I'm glad. It's quite eerie.
Mm.
That milky effect I was telling you about sort of is happening on the slab of wall. It's strongly backlit. The key light was from sort of the back of the subject, and it was for 30 seconds, and you can see the backlighting on the struts and on the ground in particular, and then the fill light, which is from the more toward from the front of the camera, they're sort of softening the shadows a bit so it's not too contrasty. But it's being mainly a backlit shot, it's got that sense of drama.
Well, Andrew, you would normally take a lot more than that, but let's get out of this building site and go back to your studio and have a look at the finished product, your current exhibition.
This is Maddox Street. It's part of a group of shots I did in car parks. So you have the mixture of both the minimal slab of concrete and the struts, and also that beautiful, beautiful texture of the dugout ground. And by lighting that ground in a more of a contrasty manner, it really brings up that texture, and then the slab itself can be lit smoothly or in another way altogether. And in this particular one, it's a real juxtaposition of the smooth slab with the highly textured ground that it's sitting next to.
Well, this one over here looks like another kind of slab, doesn't it? I mean, it's almost coffin-like, this big slab of concrete lying on the ground here.
Yeah, and again, that was a breakthrough shot. Although slabs were the subject matter, you don't want every shot to be the same. And although you're in different sites and they're all going to look different, you don't want the same look, you know, over a whole exhibition. And I saw that was a smaller slab sitting on the footing of a building, ready to be probably tilted up as a wall.
Mm.
That night I was looking at it and I thought, I will try actually just tracing the slab with light and only lighting the slab and overlighting it so it actually maybe would glow and leave everything else a little bit darker. And that's the first time I tried it, and I pulled the Polaroid and I was so excited because it really looked like almost like a gold ingot that was glowing ethereally by itself. And that set me on a path of finding slabs lying on the ground that I could make glow.
And as you're saying, that part of it is about the process of shooting, that is being on a construction site and mostly in the city in the middle of the night. And that's what gives it the edge for you, because you're on edge doing it.
Yeah, I don't enjoy that process at all. I do it to see the final product. That might not be for, in this case, up to 2 years before I finally got around to printing them. So it was 2 years of shooting on and off, and it was that third year that I finally got to see them in all their glory. And it's a long time to wait to get your reward. The actual doing of it, it's work, it's a chore.
This is always in the result, isn't it? Andrew Curtis, thanks very much for being today's maker.
Thanks.